We're getting away from the woo-woo. We're getting away from all that. We're talking about using tarot to help you with creativity, problem solving, creative writing, all that kind of stuff.
Welcome to the Phase 4 podcast, inspired by Vishen Lakhiani and Ajit Nawalkar, co-founders of EverCoach, a division of Vine Valley. In this podcast, we speak to coaches and creatives about where they were, where they are, and where they are going. This is the intersection of what we focus on expands, and your story is your superpower. My guest today is Miriam Rachel. She's a freelance writer, a blogger, featured frequently on Medium.com. She's a virtual assistant. She's a mental health advocate, and she's a tarot reader. And so today we're going to discuss all of these things, plus more. And Miriam, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. I'm grateful that you accepted my invitation. And I guess I'd like to start, maybe just tell us a bit more about yourself.
Okay, so I guess you can say I'm the jack of all trades because I write, I'm a tarot reader, I'm a blogger, I'm an author, and I actually do a lot of, most of my stuff is through freelance writing, but I'm doing a lot of tarot readings and I absolutely love it. I've been doing tarot readings for over 15 years and it's been quite a journey, so I'm actually doing so much more with it. I actually just wrote a book about using tarot to help you overcome people-pleasing issues, because I struggled with that until I encountered a catalyst that got me out of it. So I'm very happy to share that with others too. And I am actually starting to create a signature program to help to teach people how to use tarot for practical situations. We're getting away from the woo-woo. We're getting away from all that. We're talking about using tarot to help you with creativity, problem solving, creative writing, all that kind of stuff.
That's awesome. So we'll stick with that. So the book is called Echoism with Tarot, Using Tarot for Boundary Setting and People Pleasing?
Yeah, Overcoming Echoism with Tarot. That's right. Yes.
Oh, right. Overcoming. I apologize. Yeah.
No, it's okay.
And so can you tell us a bit more about this book and what people can look forward
to? Yeah. So I talk about echoism because echoism is pathological people pleasing. And a lot of people aren't familiar with the term. I just want to be transparent. I'm not a psychologist or therapist or anything, okay? So I'm not an expert. I'm just talking about my experience and how it's affected me and how I use tarot to help me also, you know, keep reaffirming my boundaries. But that's not what got me out of it. It just helps me keep doing it. Okay. So, I mean, you know, I was that sensitive child, the odd one. And of course, I was like a bully target and scapegoating target. So I developed trauma as a result, see PTSD and depression. And on top of that, I became a pathological people pleaser. Yeah, I just wanted people to like me. So I sacrificed myself. I sacrificed my just everything. I sacrificed my life, basically, to make others happy, just to be accepted. And it didn't really work, okay? So what broke me out of it? Well, the thing is, I have two kids. One has complex special needs. And I did my best to take care of him, but I couldn't. I was, it got to a point where I was so severely depressed that I was almost catatonic. I was very morbidly obese. I've always struggled with my weight, but that I was the biggest that I ever was when I... you know, at just right before things got very bad, right when things were getting very bad. And society expects me to be the forever caregiver to a child with special needs. And I couldn't go for that. It was becoming a very dangerous situation. I had to make the bold move and get him transitioned to a therapeutic residence because I was not fit to take care of him. And I have a daughter too. It wouldn't, like, what would happen? What would happen if I wasn't able to do it anymore? What would happen to her? I wouldn't want her to do that. It's not her responsibility. So that was one of the hardest things I've ever done. And that is when I realized that my needs, I kept putting them on the back burner all the time. It was time for me to start focusing on my needs. And after that, I slowly shed the echoism. I started becoming more selfish. I started setting boundaries. I started saying no. I wasn't ready to do favors for those just because they wanted me to. I was just more, I was taking care of myself more. And I have to admit, though, I have gotten a little too selfish at times, so I've had to sort of dial back. So really, the best thing is I'll never ever sacrifice your boundaries, your needs, but at the same time, choose your battles wisely.
Yeah, I love it. So just for anyone who doesn't know, echoism, we're talking like echo chamber, right? Where you're going outside looking for information to positively reinforce your views of the world without looking at...
Echoism is basically like you're basically an echoist. You see there's a story of Narcissus and Echo, I believe. Narcissism is the okay, it's a scale. Narcissism and echoism. You got narcissism here, you got echoism there. So at the highest part of narcissism is clinical narcissistic personality disorder, right? And that's where only your needs count. Only your wants matter. You don't care about anyone else. Where echoism is, nobody else's or everybody else's needs are more important than yours. You don't want to be seen in the spotlight. You don't want to, your needs don't matter. That's echoism.
Okay. So I got it totally wrong.
No, it's okay. It's
I'm thinking CNN and Fox and like, see, it says what I think. It's like, yeah, okay.
So the story was, is that I believe that Echo was in love with Narcissus and he didn't love her. So I think what happened was is that the last thing that he said to her, she echoed. So that's why it's called echoism, I believe. And that's all in there. And I also talk about tarot, how that ties into it. I talk about how tarot, I talk about the cards, and I talk about how each tarot card is related to aspects of people-pleasing and people-pleasing recovery. And I also add some spreads that can help you overcome those how you can start setting boundaries, how you can start saying no, and all that. So that's I believe that's a way to help you start setting boundaries. Now the thing is, again, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a therapist or anything like that, and I do not say that tarot is a replacement for therapy, because it's not, but it is a great addition.
Yeah, I agree. We always want to talk to the doctors, whoever we have to, and then use everything else together and not one over the other.
That's right.
I want to go to tarot, but before that, let's just stick here in the book. We kind of already went, but with echoism and so boundaries, people pleasing. There's a really good book by his name's John Townsend, and I forget the other author, two authors called Boundaries. And there's lots of religious overtones in it. So you'll hear a lot of things from the Bible, but this book is really for anybody. And if you can get past those Bible quotes, if it's not for you, there's so much valuable information about setting boundaries and about how we people please because of things that happen when we're young. And then we just kind of do it the rest of our life. And we're looking outside of ourselves for something, some kind of approval or some kind of meaning and significance, when really, like, it has to be an inside job, and we have to find it inside ourselves first. Love yourself, then you can love others.
Yeah, and I believe that the healthiest place to be is to be in the middle of that spectrum, right? Where you have some healthy narcissism, where you don't discount your needs, and you do take care of yourself, and you will put yourself above others if you need to, but at the same time, not at the expense of others, right?
Yeah. And then, so one article, your most recent article on Medium, the subtitle or the tagline of that article is perfect, but the whole article is called, "Holy Crap, I Can't Believe That Asking for Help Is Easy for Me to Do." Then the subtitle, but not, it's not always like, but it was not always that way.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, that's right. Because the fact of the matter is that I used to want to do everything by myself, right? I didn't want to ask for help because I was conditioned to do everything. I mean, I'm also the oldest child, right? So of course there's also oldest child syndrome in there. And I'm the daughter. Of course, my younger brother is a babied brother and he's estranged, but I don't want to get into him because he's not relevant in my life anyway. My choice. So anyway, yeah. So what the thing is, it's amazing that asking for help is not, it doesn't sound like it should be something amazing to do, but when you've been so much in the thick of egoism, people pleasing and all that, it's amazing to ask for help. It just is. It really is. Because you don't even, and the thing is, you may not even realize it. And I didn't realize it. Like, oh, but you know what? I've been asking for help because I was always used to doing things by myself, but it's actually an accomplishment.
Yeah. So you're taking on a bunch of different archetypes, right? The mother, the oldest child, all these things. And so it kind of makes sense. But then you notice, or did you, I wonder, when you ask for help, people respond?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you got to go to the right people too. And I believe there's also the fear of not wanting to ask for help because you're going to be rejected. And the thing is, people are going to say no, as they should say no, because if they didn't say no when they really wanted to say no, that would be people pleasing on their part. But it's really a matter of finding the right people who will help you out, right? So that's really what it's about. Instead of me being the one to do everything, I knew I wasn't going to do that. Because for basically what I needed to do, it was my mother needed help for something. And I, in my old days, I would have just sacrificed my work, my time to do everything I could to help with this inquiry that she had. So instead, I related to somebody else that I knew could help instead of me having to sacrifice anything.
Beautiful. Yeah. And something happens too. Once you set those boundaries, I've noticed personally that people respond, but you don't have to give a reason. Like if somebody needs some help and you just can't do it because you don't have to tell them why or explain yourself. Just, no, I can't. And then that doesn't mean no all the time. That just means just this time I have stuff to do. But can we talk about, do you have your tarot deck with you?
Yeah, just give me a second.
So we could go either direction, tarot or mental health advocate. We'll do both, but whatever one you want to go to first. And then my question was going to be, do you want to play and use me as a pawn or something with the tarot?
Sure. Sure. Okay. So what would you like me to do?
I have no idea. So tell us more about tarot and then, yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, tarot is actually an amazing tool that, actually, it first started as a game back in the 15th century. It just started as a game, but then over time, it turned into a divination tool. And then over further time, it started being used for other things such as creativity, which is exactly what I want to talk more about. Also, a psychological tool too, right? Carl Jung used it for that. And just it's a great tool for problem solving. It's a great tool just for self-reflection, especially. So that's basically what it is. And I've been doing, I do readings. I do a lot of readings. And the thing is, you don't have to be psychic in order to read the tarot. You do have to have a degree of heightened intuition. And you have to be able to do some problem solving, because that tarot makes you dig in within yourself to, you know, just intuitively feel what the issue is, right?
Okay, so that sounds to me like something that it doesn't, you're not born with. You can develop it and get more skillful at it.
Well, I believe that everyone has skills that they already have and others don't have the strong skills, right? Like say, for instance, I can't do math. I just can't. But there's others that are skilled mathematicians, but math, no. But I do have heightened psychic ability. And the thing is, if you don't practice it, it will atrophy, right? It's like a muscle. So I decided to just keep working at it and to excel at it.
Yeah, definitely. Like a muscle, right? And all these intuitive skills, it doesn't have to be tarot, but just everything to do with intuition.
That's right.
It's like a knife, right? You can either have a sharp or you can have a dull. It's up to you. And
that's
right. The more you practice and sharpen it, the sharper it'll be.
That's right, yeah.
I guess what I know, not much about tarot, maybe a couple of the pictures, or maybe it's a Jimi Hendrix song, but is there a Joker and the Thief?
Well, the Fool is like the Joker, right? The Fool is, see, I don't do a lot of cartomancy because, you know, using divination with playing cards is cartomancy, right? I don't do a lot of that. I did actually do a whole write-up on that on Medium because I thought it was pretty cool, but I don't really practice it. But the Joker, the Fool, is like the Joker. So the Fool is all about being innocent, ready to take on new experiences that you know nothing about. It's being not, but it's also being naive, being a risk taker. You know, just think about a baby. A baby does not know anything about life. So the baby's coming into life without any experience. But along the way, the baby grows up and ends up learning about about life and the twists and turns. That's basically the Fool's Journey, the story of the Major Arcana. And I actually just wrote something on the Medium about that, the story of the Major Arcana. And you can compare it to anyone going into something brand new that they know nothing about, going into a brand new grade, a job that you haven't worked at before, right? So that's the Fool.
Amazing. I think, what about, okay, so creativity. So you use these cards to help with creativity, and how, so maybe talk about that and also other ways that you develop your creativity, because your writing, I like it.
Definitely. So one thing that I actually do write about often, I just did my own podcast. Like my podcast right now is solo, but very soon it's going to have guests. I just wrote about how to use tarot cards to promote creativity and with your creative writing. So one thing you can do is help yourself go bust through writer block, because you may be like, oh no, I'm not sure what to write about. Oh geez, you know, I mean, you could look at Reddit, Quora, and just even Amazon. Sure, you can look at those for ideas, but you may still think, oh, well, I don't know. I want to make it more personal. So all you need to do is just pick a card, right? Pick a card to help you develop some ideas. Say, for instance, you pull the Three of Swords, which is the card that has to do with betrayal and heartbreak and all that. So, okay, the Three of Swords, what could I write about? I guess I could write about something that happened where I felt, or so how someone betrayed me, something that I was heartbroken over, maybe something that I'm grieving over. Then you start swimming around with ideas until you find the right one, right?
Yeah, very cool. And then outside of tarot, what are some other ways that you can develop creativity? Or I don't think it's develop, it's unlocking it, right?
It's
We all
unlocking
have
it,
it,
yeah.
and then we forget it, and then we have to kind of remember and unlock it.
Well, I believe that if I think it's a really good idea to write as often as you can. I think that will help you keep unlocking the creative side of you. I believe that if you write, because I write like almost every day, I write several times in Medium, I write often on Substack. I have writing, I have freelance writing clients I write for. So I believe it's just a matter of writing a lot. So that will keep your imagination flowing. Even if you write nonfiction, which I do, I don't write fiction. It's just not my thing. But you still need to be creative when it comes to writing anything, right? Unless you're doing technical writing, which is not something that I like either. So.
Yeah, academic writing is not fun for me. It's
No.
so frustrating.
I
But
know.
yeah, even journaling, right, will help you unlock creativity and get different ideas. And
Journaling is good, yeah, because that's another thing that tarot is good for, journaling. Yes, that's actually quite important. Journaling, writing, just in, you know, just whatever's on your mind. And then you'll have an easier time allowing things flow, and then you'll actually have an easier time thinking about topics to write about if you keep the flow going. I understand you still may face writer's block because it's like, oh, well, everything's all gone. Well, it's not. Just pull a couple of cards and then find the one what that resonates with you, and that, you know, that you'll use it to unlock some ideas that you can write about, right?
yeah, 100%. And journaling is a good one for, like you said, flow. That's the right word. Because what happens if you have positive or negative emotions and thoughts and so cycling around your head, They'll just keep swimming around your head. But if you journal them, you're taking them out physically and putting them on paper. And then, like, I've done it where I'm angry about something and I'll write about it. And then I feel better afterwards. It's almost like a form of therapy.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. I teach a creative writing workshop. And there's that keeps going. Like, there's a cohort all the time. But that's one of the things is, like, starting with journaling, right? And then people don't know what to journal. So it's like, just write whatever you're doing that day, whatever you did yesterday, right? Whatever you see. Like, it doesn't have to be a topic. Just write nothing.
Yeah.
And the reason for doing that, we do that maybe the first, we do it the whole time, but after the first 3 weeks, people are resistant. But what happens is it's like getting out that stuff. And then once that's out, now then all that other stuff's already underneath. And then it comes out and it's like, wow, very transformative.
It becomes like an avalanche of all these ideas, right? That you didn't think that you had. It's amazing.
Yeah. So you have one book. You have more books coming?
Sure. Not right now, but I'm sure there will be on the horizon. It's just I've got a lot of things. Like I said, I'm developing a signature program about using how to use tarot to promote creativity, use it for self-reflection. Anything that's practical that you can use in everyday life works. I mean, I'm not that I have anything against the woo-woo stuff because I am a tarot reader. I'm psychic myself. But I do believe that tarot has a place other than that, right?
I love it because it's original and unique, and it's not, we don't see it. So you're carving out a little niche that's good for you.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, there are others that do the same, but which is good because it shows there's a market for it, right? Yeah. So that's, but I think it's something that should be, and I do think it is coming out more and more because I think more are coming out with these ideas. So it is actually a good thing though, because another reason it's a good thing is that it'll help people become more open-minded when it comes to tarot, because there's a lot of people that aren't, understandably so, and I certainly wouldn't want to pressure anyone into doing something that they're not comfortable with. But the thing is, if you say are religious, you're not going to be going for tarot for divination, because that's not what they go for. It's against the Bible and all that, right? But the thing is, they need to understand that tarot is not only used for divination, it can be used for practical stuff. And I am starting to see that it's being used for other things. I'm even seeing Christian authors write about how to use tarot for basically the things that I've talked about, for self-reflection, that has absolutely nothing with divination or anything. So that's good that it's out there, because it shows you people are slowly starting to accept it.
Wow. I love it.
Yeah.
And so a couple more areas, but before that, anybody, if this resonates with you, reach out to Miriam. Please leave a review if you feel obliged. If not, no hard sell. And if you need a tarot reader, actually, you got everything with Miriam, because she's a VA, a tarot reader, mental health advocate, and a writer, and a blogger. So you got lots of different areas, and she can help you out, have a conversation, and make that connection. But I guess I would like to maybe turn now towards mental health advocacy. It's, my listeners know it's something important to me, and it seems like it's important to you too. So can we talk about it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the thing is, mental health advocacy is important to help keep busting the stigma against it. And the thing is that I do think there is improvement, but there's still a way to go. And unfortunately, I don't think the stigma is ever going to be erased completely. It's better than it was. Like back in the 90s, it was a terrible thing to say that you had to go to a psychologist. It was something that had to be hush-hush. But now, it's being more open. Now, the thing is that in 2002, I had my daughter, right? And I ended up with postpartum depression. I do have depression. Of course, I was prone to that. I was ashamed to talk about it. I was ashamed of it. I had to keep it hush-hush. I had to go to a psychiatrist to, get medication and all that. And therapy, it was just something I was ashamed of, because the stigma was pretty strong even back then. But back in those days that you had Yahoo groups, those are not a thing anymore. But I was actually pleasantly surprised to see that there were groups for that, which means that people were discussing it even then. But then I'd say over the span of a decade, within that time, I started seeing more and more and more discussed about depression and anxiety. And over time, I think the stigma started to soften, but sadly, it will never completely go away. The thing is, if you say you've got mental health issues, depression, anxiety, or whatever, there's going to be a lot of toxic positivity around that. Like, oh, well, all you need to do is think positive. Well, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. You have an issue. You've got, mindset only can help to a degree. If you have depression or anxiety, yes, you could use mindset to help. But sometimes if you say have clinical depression like I do, you're going to go through valleys and you just do your best during that time. But no amount of positive thinking is going to get me out of it. I just naturally get out of it when I'm able to. Yes, there usually is a trigger that gets me into it. But it's just a matter of being aware that I'm in it and just doing my best, because my best is going to not be the same. Like, while I'm in a depressive valley, my best is not going to be the same as my best is when I'm okay. You know what I mean? So
yeah. So what do you do in that case? Do you just kind of sit with it and know that this is what's happening, and eventually, just like clouds,
yeah,
it will
pass? Yeah, I'm aware. It's like, oh, okay. I just do what I feel I can do. I'm able to work even when I'm in that. You know, it's not so bad to the point that I can't get out of bed or shower or anything like that. But I just realize that it's going to be hard. I can only do what I can do. For instance, a 15-minute grocery, errand would take an hour when I'm in a depressive valley. I know things are going to be slower, and I know that I'm not going to be able to do too much except for what I absolutely need to do, and I'm not going to make myself do too much until I'm able to get through it. I mean, what got me into the last valley was back in the summer, because I was promised a job that didn't end up panning out. It's a long story. The company, they're around, but they're very dirty, and I'm not going to delve into it. I'm not going to say names, but I definitely have a lot of hard feelings towards them. I'll just say that. But they talk about Three of Swords. They did betray me in so many ways. They made promises that they just failed to keep. And they don't see anything wrong with what they did, which really is mind-boggling to me. I know that they're going to implode, and I feel it's coming. And I feel like the owner is in complete denial, is completely delusional, and it's just a matter of time. But anyway.
Do you work for the federal government? Is that...
No. No. No.
It's a joke. It's a joke.
I know. But no, I don't. I would never be part of any of that. So
I would wonder, what do you think? Do you think that like COVID kind of helped to lift this stigma a little bit, because people were isolated and started to realize, oh, this is what people are talking about?
Yes, I believe that. Yes. Oh, yes. Very important. The pandemic really did highlight so much of that. I think so many things were highlighted during the pandemic. Oh, yeah. And I think the reason that the world is nuts the way it is because of the effects of it. So, oh, yeah, I do believe that, yes, the stigma was better even before COVID, but now it's a lot more in the open, which is a good thing. But yeah, I think so.
I'll tell you something cool that happened. I don't know if it's cool, but something that was missed the whole time with mental health is that there was people isolating already, and they didn't have access to these groups because they couldn't leave their house and whatever reason, right? It's nice we have some workers that can go in and help people with their medicine and all this stuff, but there was people who physically couldn't go to a group and couldn't leave their apartment or whatever the reason, that were isolating and were definitely by themselves. And because of the pandemic, because everything had to go on Zoom, now all of a sudden I'm seeing people in the groups that nobody knew about before. Nobody was able to reach them. And so these people are actually getting some help and some support that they otherwise wouldn't get.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do believe that COVID did basically open things up more. It shattered the stigma even more, but sadly the stigma will never go away. You're going to have, unfortunately, you're going to have those that tell someone who's struggling with depression that they need to be positive and to remind them that others have it worse than they do, and that just doesn't help. And the one thing that really enraged me was that one time when I talked about my depression, I was told, well, you don't have it that bad. My aunt has cancer. She's got it bad. And I'm like, okay. And I actually started talking about, you can't compare cancer to depression, not the kind of diseases that they are, but you can compare the severity. Okay. Cancer can kill. And guess what? So can depression. Okay. Here's the other thing. If someone says they have cancer, they get all the support in the world. They get everything. Oh, what can I do for you? Would you like me to bring some meals? Would you like me to do this? Would you like me to pick up your child? Like, well, what do you want me to do? But then if you say you've got depression, well, just think positive. You'll get over it. Totally different.
That's the one. Get over it.
Yeah. Doesn't work that way.
And it doesn't even matter, right? Some people might have cancer and it's obviously they don't want it, but it doesn't affect them that way at all, right? Where you could have depression and you can end up way worse than someone.
Well,
it's not perception.
That's the thing. Well, I mean, and the big difference is that those who have cancer get the support for it because it is something that, oh, well, you know, it's one of those socially acceptable things to give support for. But if you have depression, I mean, it's not as bad now as it used to be, but back then, it sure was. If you had depression and you said that, nobody would care. No one would even give it a second thought about you needing support. They would say, well, you need a kick in the pants, and that's it.
Yeah, I have a friend from Bangladesh, and she said, like, it's not even a thing over there because of exactly what you just said. It's like a societal thing where, you tell your parents I'm depressed, they're like, no, you're not. And it's just same with just other things like that, where we're at least having a little bit of a conversation, and thankfully it's getting bigger and bigger. But there's other places in the world where, like, you're not even allowed to be, even though you are. And it's so I have so much compassion and empathy for this conversation. But the final place I want to go, and I think this is really valuable for my listeners and for you, is VA, because I'm a coach. Most of my guests are coaches. A lot of listeners are coaches. And I know at the very beginning of a coaching journey, the first year, 2 years, maybe even three, there's just so many things to do.
Right.
You can't do all of them. And to hire a private assistant costs a lot of money. And now we have VAs, virtual assistants, which changes that perspective and dynamic a lot. Now you can outsource small jobs that you need. Maybe posting on social media comes to mind as a big one. But can you explain maybe what do you do as a VA and how people can get a hold of you for that specific thing?
Yeah, so I actually am going to remove that from my profile. I am, you know what? It's okay. No, it's okay. I'm not doing it as much now. In fact, I'm going to be teaching my daughter how to do it. So, you know, eventually she'll be the one to take it over because I've got so much to do. I don't even do too much of it. But hey, it's okay. It's okay. Call me anyway because my daughter will be able to help.
Yeah, there you go.
No, it's all good. All good. No worries.
All right. And then another thing I kind of love to always ask people about is, like, what are some of the books or mentors that helped you get to where you are today?
Well, definitely Dr. Craig Malkin is a great author. He talks about echoism, and he really goes, and he was actually the first one that really talked a lot about it. He was the first one where I, you know, learned about it, and I think he's quite good. And Dr. Arthur Rosengarten for Tarot and Psychology is also another really good book where you are learning a lot about using tarot and how it ties in with psychology. And I think those are the two really good books that, the two authors that I think are quite good.
Brilliant. And before I ask my final question, you can take it wherever you want, yourself, your business, your dreams, some vacations, wherever you want to go. Do you have like a message maybe or anything you want to leave the audience with?
Sure. Be authentic. Don't let anyone tell you what to do. Don't do things for people just because you might not be liked by them. Just literally be authentic and be true to your word.
I love it. Yeah, the book boundaries, again, it's coming to mind. So, like, this book is so powerful. So, if you don't know how to set boundaries, check that book. Reach out to Miriam. Anyway, I'm Miriam. My final question is, how can people reach you?
Well, there's different ways that they can reach me. They can go to my website, miriamreadstarot.com. I also have my Substack, Miriam Reads Tarot at substack.com. You can listen to my podcast there too. And also there is Medium, Ms. Mir at medium.com. I'm also on Instagram. I'm starting to do more with it now. Also Miriam Reads Tarot on Instagram. So
beautiful. And we'll put all those in the show notes. But Miriam, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
I'm so grateful.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to the Phase 4 Podcast.